So I'm Nancy Cushing. I think I know a lot of the people that are here in this room. I've been working on the histories of Newcastle for quite a long time. I guess I'm in my third decade of doing that. I came here from Canada in 1989. I came to Australia and I came to Newcastle to start my PhD in 1991. And I decided to write a history of Newcastle as my doctorate. And I look back on that now and I think, gosh, that was cheeky. I can't believe that the people of Newcastle didn't rise up as a man and women and just say, what do you think you know about this city? So I didn't know much about it when I started. And if any of you are coming on the archives tour tomorrow across the street at the public library or the regional library, I'll be talking about how I came to know Newcastle's history very well by delving into their archives and particularly into the council minute books. And I brought along to that session some of my handwritten notes that I made back then in 1991, 92, going through so carefully through those council minute books and finding out so many interesting things. But I did go back to my notes for 1909 and I thought, what were they writing in the council minute books about the coal monument that they erected that year? So could I have the next slide? Oh, look, she's distracted. Oi, there we go. Thank you. Oh, yeah, we wanted some low light. So the coal monument. Now, I'm afraid all my slides are maybe a little bit stretched. So the coal monument's a little bit more vertical than that, but that's pretty much a good representation. Oh, maybe just on that screen. The smaller screens, it seems to be okay. So some of you may be familiar with this cube of coal on a column, as it has been called. And it was erected as a jubilee monument for Newcastle Municipal Council, so celebrating 50 years of local government in Newcastle, which had been inaugurated in 1859 with James Hannell, the son of a convict, as the first mayor. He was also a member of the Legislative Assembly. This was 50 years on, and so meetings were held, citizens' committees struck about how they would mark this important anniversary, and many different ideas were canvassed. It was thought that a statue of James Hannell might be appropriate, but the committee decided if a statue was wanted, his family should pay for it. They weren't going to pay for it. It was suggested a fountain with 13 jets could be erected, and that was the first thing the committee decided would be their endorsed choice, but then that was set aside. And so finally they landed on this idea of a monument to coal. So it's officially a jubilee monument, marking those 50 years of local government, but I think most people would know it as the coal monument. And so it is in this photograph in its third resting place in Parnell Place in Newcastle East. So could I have the next slide, please? So Richard was talking about how controversial some monuments and statues have become because the legacy of that person or idea or event that is commemorated has changed in the way that we look at it, that it is no longer as revered as it once was. And maybe it's really that we're getting to know the whole story and not just a partial story, which was really what was being marked in that statue. And so, of course, we've had a big reconsideration of coal since 1909. Now, in 1909, the people of Newcastle probably weren't aware of it, but if they had combed carefully through newspapers like I have done on Trove, they would have been able to read that scientists were starting to put together the idea that burning coal might lead to warming environments. And some of those very early articles from the turn of the 20th century were actually quite positive, in the same way that my sister, living in Nova Scotia, has been positive about climate change to some degree, when she's just joking, saying, when is it going to come? It's so cold. I want a warmer climate. So they were saying this could be really good for the earth because there'd be more areas that are productive and we can grow more crops and so on with global warming. So they didn't really, they weren't putting all the pieces together at that point. But clearly by 2017, as we saw in this performance in Parliament House in Canberra, the ideas that coal might not be a hero and, in fact, might be a villain, might be our co-conspirator with human beings taking us into the Anthropocene was certainly something that was in the media being discussed. And so this brought me to the idea that most of the controversies around monuments that we've heard about have been about people, individuals, whether they, you know, as Richard was saying, whether it's Cecil Rhodes or whether it's commanders in the American Civil War, whether it is colonial administrators here in Australia or explorers, but not so much about a whole industry or a commodity, something like coal. So could I have the next slide, please? So the idea for the coal monument, for the form that it took in Newcastle, was said to be inspired at the time by the Treaty Stone in Limerick, erected in 1865. So this was a stone on which the Treaty of Limerick had been signed in, quickly checks notes, 1691. So that was after the Battle of the Boyne, ending the Jacobite wars that had been going on in Ireland. One of the influential people on the Citizens Committee in Newcastle was a Dr. Martin Boyle, who was the superintendent at Newcastle Hospital and was soon to be appointed to the Legislative Council by the Labour government. So a man with both Irish and Labour sympathies. And so he had this idea that this might be an appropriate way to mark the anniversary by creating something inspired by this treaty stone, which would also put coal at the centre. Now, I must say, Doyle was not as enthusiastic about the idea of putting coal at the centre of it as some of the others were. He really wanted to see a coal miner on this memorial. And I think that is something that is distinctive about it, that if we look at later memorials, and Catherine, do I have a slide? I have a big array of slides and then a smaller set, and perhaps I haven't included that one here. Just quickly. Yes, thank you. Can you see them in advance? Okay, so typical memorials to coal miners, if you Google coal miner memorial and look around, and many of these are much later, of course, do celebrate labour and put the individual miner at the centre of that memorialisation. Whereas I think, and could we go to the previous one again? Thank you. The coal monument puts the coal itself at the centre. And so that could be a positive thing. This could make us think about the longer history of coal. This could send us back to deep time, 300 million years, to the Carboniferous period when coal was being formed. It could give us a sense we could include Indigenous use of coal being memorialised in this memorial. But I think at the time in 1909 and reading the discussions around what form the memorial should take, it was much more about labour and anti-labour sympathies, which were, you know, very much the political concerns of the day, with Doyle being in the minority of saying we should really be celebrating coal miners, and the other members of the committee, most of whom were aldermen, saying that it's about coal. Coal made us what we are. Coal made us the city that we are. That is what we celebrate in this monument. And so it's also, I think, to some extent, an anti-colonial model. It's pro-nationalist Australia, because coal isn't like wool, and other commodities, wheat, that are fitting Australia into that colonial exchange of value. Because coal really wasn't being sent back to Britain. Britain had plenty of coal. Coal was being marketed internally in Australia, and Melbourne was usually Newcastle's largest purchaser through the colonial period in the early 20th century. But it was also opening up new connections within and outside of the British Empire for Australia's coal. So I think there's some interesting things that we can read from this coal monument. And here it is in situ in the first location. So it was set up in Hunter Street Extended, when they extended Hunter Street through what had been a park. You can see it's also with the hospital, the north wing of the hospital at the rear, and remember that Doyle was the superintendent of the hospital. So I think he was right in, he was very influential in all of this, including its positioning. So not very many years later, yeah, you can go on to the next one. There is obviously a shift, and this is 1909. It's actually inaugurated in in 1910. And then a couple of years later, First World War. And this soldier memorial, which was funded by a local man named Gardner, that's why it has that name, is meant to be the first that actually included a soldier in the memorial in Australia. So prior to that, they were using allegorical figures and plinths and so on. But this is, in Newcastle, the one that brings the attention to that individual, if anonymous, soldier. And I think that's an interesting contrast with the Cole Monument just a few years earlier. And, of course, we see a proliferation of these sorts of memorials coming out of World War One, where it is about the person. Okay, the next slide, please. So where did the Cole idea come from? Well, I think it's probably inspired by things like these Cole arches, which were being built in Newcastle from the 1860s. So there's one when Queen Victoria's son, Prince Alfred, visited. They built a Cole arch for him to welcome him to Newcastle. There's this one, which is 1897, so that's the centenary of Shortland's exploration of the mouth of the Hunter River. And there was one in the Federation Day Parade in Sydney. There was a coal arch with actual coal miners on it going through the motions of mining the coal as the procession went through it. So these use real coal, and that's another contrast with this memorial, is that the coal memorial is actually made of marble. The block, the black block on the top of it is marble. Could I have the next slide, please? Okay, so and there you can see it being taken apart a couple of years ago when it had to be moved to make way for the supercars because the where it was in Parnell Place, they needed to widen the road for the vroom-vroom. And this was documented at the time, and it wasn't perhaps treated all that respectfully at the time. It was pretty much chiseled apart as it had been in the past when it was moved the first time, but it is now re-erected as you saw in the first image. So I've talked about what it was about and how it was thought to be appropriate. It was pretty much then ignored through the 20th century. It only seems to come to people's attention when somebody's vandalized it. And it has to be, you know, occasionally people will pop up and say, this is terrible, it's being left to rack and ruin, the council will invest in tidying it up again, and then it just subsides again. When they put it in Parnell Place, it was considered to be a bit of a backwater, a place to get rid of things. You know, there was the Zara Street power station on one side, there was the tram depot on the other side. It was a dirty, wasn't a prestigious place in the way that it has become now. And so what I would like to talk about when we have the discussion is sort of what next for a memorial like this. And so I'll be interested to hear what other people have to say, and I have some ideas about where we might go. Could I have the next slide, please? And so clearly people have been making sort of temporary memorials against coal with this sort of graffiti on large and prominent landmarks. Next one, please. More fugitive things like this by Greenpeace at Parliament House, sort of guerrilla attacks. But if I could have the final slide. Thank you. This one I was really taken by, and I'd love to see Newcastle do something like this. So this is an English artist, Tom Colebrook, who has designed a coal monument, which is an anti-memorial. And that is one that won't last and won't become problematic in 50 years because we no longer think the same way, but which by its nature falls apart. So he's using actual coal, and as is well known, if actual coal is just left out to weather, it won't last forever. It will decay. And I would suggest having something like this in a prominent position in Newcastle East, a place where the people out on the coal ships could see it, a place where people living in the apartments or coming to the beach or coming to the supercars could see it, where they would be encouraged to come and chip off a little piece to take home for themselves or put their initials in it, and just slowly see it subside, as you see on the right side of this image. So that's my proposal for a coal anti-memorial in Newcastle. Thank you.
Okay.